things like what happens on that board over there are the byproduct. Part of what we're doing here is to make sure that we limit that type of an event from ever happening again. Please keep in mind this is all about handling water. 10 gallons of water in a 5-gallon bucket is always going to be a challenge. That said, we're far better prepared than we were in the past to be able to take that on. What we'll continue to work on is making sure things like that are less likely to occur, while also helping the residents not having to pay mandatory flood insurance. So, that being said, I'm going to move right along. Thank you, everybody, for coming in to help and making sure this thing keeps moving along. Next up is the finance report. We have claims from for October. The claims this time, $352,623.31. We need a motion to talk about that. What say you?
Mr. Chairman, I'd make a motion that we approve the claims in that amount. I second.
Motion and second. Mr. Repay.
Good evening. As always, I'll go over some of the larger number of ones, and then if you have any questions about some of the other ones that I may have overlooked, feel free to ask. $62,700 to Patrick Engineering for the engineering of the railroad bridge over Deep River. That project is on time, on budget. They have submitted all of their requests for permits from DNR and other regulatory agencies, and they're starting to get back some of the responses. All for the positive, still anticipating to be bid out this winter for construction in spring of 18. DLZ, $33,788 for the design of the Kennedy Avenue Bridge. That as well is going to be probably bid out in likely spring of 18, construction starting in summer of 18. It's going to be a 2-year construction cycle because they did not want to, if you remember, close down all of Kennedy Avenue at one time. So that will be an 18/19 project. The Oros for $65,400 for the Chase Street manhole rehabilitation. They're almost complete as of yesterday. That is the extension of the manholes, encasing them in the little tubes in the concrete, which will prevent water from flowing in to those manholes because they're located technically in the river as far as flooding. So that is our last project that we need to do to resolve those issues. As you remember, we did the ones off of Harrison, the ones off of Broadway, the ones between Manor and Lyman. And then this was the last one. And so by them now being raised and vented, we should not have that problem again. Grimmer rebuilt both fishing piers that were vandalized and burnt down, both one at Oxbow and one at or near Lake Etta. So those are now up and functioning, and I believe the Fisher folks are excited for that. And it looks
for 40 grand, they should be cooking us dinner.
Well, it's what it is. You want to make it out of
just
paper?
Sorry.
You can have it. And then the other one, Weed Patch, which is our seasonal application for the rocks and the areas by the pump station so that we can pass our inspections, was 4,000. We've got a couple acquisitions for some properties that we're doing in Lake Station, and I'm trying to, and Gary North levee paving, which is about 85% complete. The Hammond part is complete. That's the area between Cammon Avenue and Northcott. USGS are our normal monitors. We just signed another agreement to increase the number of monitors along Little Cal, as well as Burns Ditch, Deep River, Turkey Creek. So the areas that have long been guessing at what the water is coming their way, and we have folks from Hobart here today. They will now have, I think, 3 gauges upstream from them to determine or at least sort of prepare for the water that is coming their way, as opposed to in previous years or prior to today, they've had no gauges except for, I believe, at the dam. So that is should be very helpful to them.
I'm sorry, tell me when those are in again?
Well, we signed the agreement today. USGS has already been out surveying the sites as far as where they can put them and getting the permission to put the gauges on the bridges and the overpasses. And they should be in, I would anticipate, the next meeting they should have them in and ready and functioning.
Is that just those 3 that we're talking
about?
No,
we added 6 new stations.
So all 6 by next month?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I mean, the ones closest right here, we're adding one at Northcott. We added one at Grant Street Pump Station. We added one, I can't remember the name of the, it's 51st and Burns Ditch, whatever that is. What's the actual street? Is that Ripley?
Yes.
So Ripley Street, one at 61st and I-65, and then 2 further back, one in Turkey Creek and one in Deep River, or I forgot the other sub watershed, but they were all coordinated not only through our office, USGS, Lake County Surveyor's Office. Actually, one of those that hasn't been determined yet will be a National Weather Service projection model. They'll be able to model, as they do, very similar to the one on Holman Avenue, as far as what they anticipate, depending on rainfall, depending on ground conditions, as to what that level should reach to at any point in time. So they'll be able to issue warnings based off of that. They still have to do some background data as far as the depth and the surface area, but we've been talking to their folks in Minnesota and Kansas City to get that all accomplished so that Deep River can now have one of those gauges.
Dan, could you clarify? So Northcott, Ripley, Grant, and I-65, that's all in a little cal?
Well, Ripley's technically Burns Ditch, but yeah, it's...
So really the only ones that are affecting upstream of Hobart is Turkey Creek and Deep River?
There's a Turkey Creek, a Deep River at 61st and 61st and I-65, and then there's one closer to Crown Point area, almost Winfield-ish. And I think it's not... I don't think it's on Deep River per se, but it's on one of the larger ones, and it's one that the surveyor's office had suggested that they would like to have.
Okay, so was that 6 or 7?
That was 6.
I must have written down something by mistake. Okay.
And then just, I know you're on this, but to make sure that those all tie into the website for us.
Well, once they're up and running, we're going to put them on the website.
10-4. All right. Anything else? All right, bring it to the board. Any questions?
I have a question here. I don't see... You didn't talk about the sandbagger. Is that, you feel guilty or?
No, it's $370.
What kind of sandbagger are you?
I'm not pretty good. I'm a 12, so it's not that good of one, I guess.
So we have one machine.
No, there's 2 machines.
Okay.
There's 2 machines. One is owned by the Army Corps of Engineers that's lent to the operation, actually Lake County technically, that we rehabilitated a couple of years back because it was in a field.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's sitting in the Highland garage.
It's in our possession?
It's not in our possession, but we know where it's at.
We have the key.
Correct.
Okay.
And then there's another one that the town of Munster has that we don't have in our possession, but we utilize when we need to fill. And thankfully, knock on wood, we haven't had to do that.
And who services those for us?
This is part of the service right here. The $370 is for the service. I think a belt broke in the machine.
I mean, are you the one that goes and pushes the button to see if it starts? Or does somebody else help us with that?
I wouldn't touch a button, but that'd be the town of Munster.
Okay.
Their public works.
And then Highland helps us with the other one?
Correct.
All right. Thank you. That's a big one. It's not funny when we need it, right?
No.
And what about the actual the supply of the bags themselves, which I learned deteriorate?
Well, if they're filled, they're deteriorated. If they're unfilled, they don't deteriorate as fast. We have those in our possession, not technically, but we know where they're at. They're mm-hmm. in the Town of Munster Public Works garage, estimated to have about 250,000 to 300,000 sandbags. And our system only requires 60-some thousand.
Okay. Not for this quiz, but eventually in the logistics to get it to the places that we've got to go, because we still have to throw a significant amount of sandbags in the event there is an event.
They're located on just off of 45th and Cabot Avenue. So the thought process is, if you can get on 45th, you can go a long way into a lot of communities that you don't otherwise, in case the Borman gets backed up, which time it does, we figured 45th was the best area.
Hey, Dan, I see Structure Point has billed us for the start of this the sewer crossing study. Can you give you any kind of time frame?
I don't have an answer for that. I don't. I mean, I think they had it in their initial proposal. It was 9 months, if my memory was correct, but I could get you a better answer for that.
That's for the GSD pipe over the river east of the Broadway Bridge, correct?
Correct. That's for their combined sewer system that runs through the river.
So, Mr. Wick, when that contract finally got worked out with that group, obviously?
That's my understanding.
Mr. Chair, I have one more question. About 32nd and Grant, I think that's where it says, mm-hmm. survey. What's the survey that we're conducting there?
So we, the survey for SEH, was that the one that you're looking for?
Yes. Yes.
So as a part of, there was four parcels there. There was some question from the board that wanted to maybe parcel that out take a little piece of that. So we needed to do a survey to make sure that we also accommodated the 15-foot easement that we needed off the toe of the levee. And so SEH went and gave us what the exact number is, as opposed to looking at the GIS map where you're going to see the entire parcel, which more than half that parcel ends up in the river. So to get a more accurate description and acreage, we had SEH go out and do it. We actually had three proposals we sought. SEH, Garcia, and DLZ, and SEH was the lowest, and they could get it to us in the time frame, because ultimately what that turned into was getting the appraisal by Mr. Kulik up there for $3,000.
Okay.
All right, any more questions on the claims? All right, there's a motion and a second. Mrs. Lambert?
Tom Wyszlinski?
Yes.
Tom Gosdecki?
Yes.
Dave Castellanos?
Yes.
LaVon Whitaker?
Yes.
William Baker?
Yes. Paying the bills. Remember when that was a challenge? All right. Executive Director's Report. Is there anything else, Dan?
I mean, above and beyond that, you know, Natalie, I'm gonna leave the good news for Natalie with the Lomar and the state line ribbon cutting. The pump stations are all in good working condition for the most part. We have a couple adjustments that we're working with Flight with, which are the folks that built the pumps or rebuilt the pumps, and they're under warranty. They've had some small issues, and we're asking them to fix it, and they're going to. Harrison Avenue Bridge is another project that we're going to do here in 18, along with 35th and Chase. Those are both eliminating closures that would otherwise need to be filled with sandbags in the city of Gary. So both those projects should go off in the spring. And construction going on. So as we talked about many times before, this is a big year for our design, and next year will be a large construction season for us. we did have advisory board meeting. The applications, both for Lake County Parks and City of Hoover, you'll hear tonight. And beyond that, I think I've hit on everything else that we've been sort of working on. We're going to work on painting our gates that are slowly deteriorating over 20-some years. We fixed some damaged fences, or in the process of fixing some damaged fences. We've also we cleaned out a blockage. Actually, they did it today at the railroad trestle over there between Kennedy Avenue and Indianapolis Boulevard. So some of those things take time just because of coordination. We have a lot of underground utilities. They get really concern when you're around there with a
backhoe.
So sometimes they don't go as fast as we'd like.
Any questions for Mr. Repay? What's going on out there in the field?
Dan, any update regarding the surveyor's office, 41st Avenue to 61st Avenue, Holbert, off 65?
Yeah. The contractor is supposed to begin, that's lateral 6, I've become keenly aware, is supposed to start the 21st, I believe, if that's a correct date that sits out in my head. He will begin, and they believe it'll take a week. So if I get 21st, the 21st is a Saturday, so it must be the 23rd.
Okay. I have a question. Beaver Dam Ditch going under I-65. Anything happen?
See Lake County Surveyor. No, I don't know. I know they have a permit withstanding with the Lake County Surveyor's Office, and I know they held up the permit because they didn't like what they had proposed, they being NDOT proposed, but I don't have anything that I could speak to.
Okay. Track that one. All right. Any other questions for Mr. Repay? Moving right along. Next up is an update from the United States Army Corps of Engineers, Ms. Mills.
She's just happy that she gets out before the presentations.
Good evening. Natalie Mills with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. I'd like to provide an update relative to the ongoing construction. Hobart Marsh Wetland Mitigation Contract, they are just continuing to plug away at the work. They have been accomplishing just earth gully work, drain tile disablement. They're doing fencing work, debris removal, and they're just going to continue to proceed with that work within the next 2 weeks. Nothing else on Hobart to report. The Hammond tieback contract, we did have the ribbon cutting for the project yesterday. It was a really nice event, so they are complete. And I'm delighted to report that the as-built drawings, that package, the LOMAR was submitted to FEMA for their review. So I can't speak to how long that process will take, but we'll certainly continue to check in to see if they need anything else from us, any kind of support or any other documentation to move the process along as quickly as possible. The only thing remaining for that contract is for the grass to grow. So, I mean, they did the seeding, and they've laid it down and just got to wait for it to grow at this point. So nice cool weather and the rain is certainly helping for that. Lastly, I don't have a sheet for that one. They haven't actually started any work yet. But just as a reminder, the in-project mitigation contract was awarded to NCAP. And they're still working on their bonds and such things. There's been no work on that project to date.
Okay, gentlemen, any question for Ms. Mills?
Yes, when did you submit the LOMAR to FEMA, the date?
Friday. So was it the 6th?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I have a question on the Hobart Marsh Wetland Mitigation. And it says there's eradication of woody and herbaceous invasive species.
Mm-hmm.
What's that word?
Herbaceous.
Herbaceous. Herbaceous. All right. Is that like Phragmites?
All of it. I mean.
So how are you killing Phragmites out there? And that's not a quiz. I mean, I'm sure that's not within your purview, but I'm just kind of curious on how you're doing
like
that.
What kind of invasive species removals they're doing?
Well, just for that particular invasive species, because it's prominent throughout our community. You know about this?
I have to ask them specifically.
I like how high they grow, and they do a great job of screening.
And they talked about it during the Players' Championship, if you were watching the golf thing.
Did they really?
They did. Anyone else watching it? See, there you go. The thing is also, a part of the contract is there's a 5-year monitoring period so that if the invasive species come back, they have to treat it before they get a closeout from them. So,
but there's like 7 million acres of it around there.
Well,
Okay.
They
and could I use that word for that particular plant, herbaceous?
If that's...
I'm loving that.
Triple point score for Scrabble, go for it.
There's going to just be a lot of herbaceous things in my life. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I mean, I can find out what chemical they're using specifically, but they are doing burns as well, but they have to do some kind of chemical. I don't know what it is specifically, though.
Okay, I'd just be kind of curious because...
Yeah, I can find out for you.
Thank you. All right, any other questions for Mrs. Mills? Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, other issues, new business. Mr. Repay, looks like we have some presentations. Is the order on the agenda how we want to do this, or is there a particular AV thing we were doing?
No, I think the order is fine on the agenda because I'm really nervous about my AV technological skills, and I'm really, really nervous. So,
are you? I can tell.
I really am, actually. So all right. We'll start with the city of Hobart, and you know they'll go over what they need to go over. And
all right, who's presenting? This gentleman is going to tell us who he is and all about Stinky Creek. You made that up, didn't you, Mr. Mandan?
My name is Jim Mandan, and I work for Robinson Engineering. Plus, I'm on the Hobart Sanitary and Stormwater Board. And with me also tonight is Robert Fulton, who was the president of the Sanitary and Stormwater Board. The project is before you is the Stinky Creek Stormwater Project. It is a very important project to the city of Hobart. It's a very large project. It addresses two of the identified areas in the lake in the Little Cayman River Basin Development Commission study. And it also is the top priority in the stormwater report. Robinson Engineering was hired about a year and a half ago to write a stormwater master plan and come up with prioritized projects and also estimates, cost estimates, for various important projects throughout Hobart Township and also Ross Township, portions of Hobart. And about 3 months ago, the Hobart Township portion of the study was completed. And this project is the number one priority in Hobart Township, and that's why it's before you. It's a large project and we need help. The homes in the area of Geyer Street and along Ridgeline Avenue, the Ridgeline Drive, flood frequently, even with as little as a half inch or 3/4 inch of rainfall. And we've been contacted by numerous residents at various times during the study. Especially, we went out and witnessed some of the rainfall events, and we're very surprised to find the frequency and the intensity of some of the flooding events that occurred with relatively minor rainfall events. The city, through the sanitary district, is leading the financing with 58% with local funding. And you might say, well, why isn't detention part of the study or part of the project? This is very similar to Highland and Munster north of Ridge Road. This project involves stormwater that's relatively close to the downstream outlet. So you want the water to be flow basically into these downstream outlets of Deep River and the locale to get in those downstream outlets and through the system before water from the south part of Hobart, Merrillville, and Ross Township comes down into the same area. You don't want detention. Detention in this particular instance would be counterproductive because it would hold water back, and it would allow it to be released at the same time the water from the south portion of this detention of this drainage area is also hitting the same area, adding to the peak. So it's counterproductive in this particular area. That's why detention is not part of the project. Many drainage problems exist throughout the watershed, really cannot be addressed until this first phase is installed. And this area, this project is going to be extended both east, west, and south after it's installed into many other neighborhoods that are also having problems. But we can't do that until this first phase is installed. The proposed ditches are planned to be two-stage ditches with native plants to allow percolation into these relatively sandy soils. Hillman Park, which is on the west end of the area that's being drained, is usually too wet after just a relatively minor rainfall event for numerous days. And in some cases, the softball fields cannot be utilized for a number of days after a relatively small rainfall event. We've spoken to the property owners in that area, which are the school system, NIPSCO, the Spanish Church, and also Save the Dunes regarding the project. And we do not expect land acquisition to be a problem because they're generally supportive of the project. So with that, I don't want to prolong the discussion. If you have questions about the project, I just wanted to point out a few of the important factors that we feel make this project worthy of your investment.
Gentlemen, what say you? Anything? I'll start. Evidently, it says here in the description that there's been ditches along the road that haven't been maintained. How much of that cause has been the impetus for what you're trying to do here by not having the maintenance of what was originally designed for this older part of Hobart?
Very little. The problem is the main drain doesn't really exist. This is a very flat area without an outlet.
What do you mean the main drain doesn't exist? So there is no main drain?
There is no main drain. Years ago, there was a lagoon area that was filled with housing developments in the 40s, late 30s and 40s and early 50s, prior to us knowing better. And the drainage was essentially cut off south and west of that area. It is extremely flat, and there is essentially no drainage down to Deep River and into the Wisconsin and Ridge Road area.
Is there any pump stations there, Mr. Manning?
Not that would service that area, no. There is in other parts of the town, both east and...
Well, I understand, north. But we're talking about this part. So how many structures are there as far as residential, commercial... occupied structures in what you would consider this area? Is this the area that you're basically working for?
Yes, I don't have a count.
Ish.
But it's a relatively large area.
Okay. So is everything that's you're highlighted, and I'm assuming these darker lines are where you're
those are the
putting in the storm sewers.
Those are the anticipated storm sewers, yes.
Okay, so in the drainage, as far as how the topography works, are they all funneling into this particular area, and how does this, you know, ditch play into that?
On the west side by Hillman Park, there's a ditch system that then drains east into the stormwater system, which is the dark blue, and then it drains north and east into a larger storm sewer system up close to Ridge Road or 37th Avenue, into a ditch, into a large culvert and ditch that exists just south of 37th along Wisconsin.
And from there it flows into Deep River?
Yes. It flows east and then north.
You had indicated that the study that we did a number of years ago that this project would not impact downstream communities.
Yes, that's the SEH model. Yes.
Is that this project plus all the future work will have no impact?
Correct.
That's your understanding?
Correct. And that's primarily because of the fact that the water is in and through before the peak hits.
Well, I guess it probably depends on where the rain event happens, but...
If it's a general event, correct.
How many homes are currently impacted? You say home and street flooding. Are these homes flooded, or they just have standing water around them?
There are probably 25 to 30 homes that actually receive water, and there are hundreds that have flooded streets, flooded yards, in some cases impassable for a number of hours.
Let's go back to the original design and construction of this subdivision. The fact that nothing really exists.
There really wasn't much of a design.
They basically just put the roads in and started throwing up structures.
Correct.
Happened a lot.
We've learned a lot since the 40s and 50s, obviously. Small lots. A great deal of coverage, no detention, no local detention, ditches that eventually get filled, culverts that disappear, driveways, no backyard drains. that happens in numerous communities, I'm sure. And then the city is basically stuck correcting the situation.
Mr. Mann, is water coming into this neighborhood from elsewhere in the watershed, or is, in your estimation or per the study, is it all primarily localized flooding based on events that happen on this particular area?
This is the watershed.
Well, I understand it's the watershed, but I'm asking is there water flowing in from the, you know, from other areas into this area
for this study? Not significant.
No. So it's just this particular area?
Yes.
And the dark shaded lines are what the city is looking to do as far as put in new storm sewers?
Correct.
Meaning, is there storm sewers there now? Are we replacing, or are you proposing to replace them, or are you looking to add new?
In most cases, there's sort of a hodgepodge of after the fact types of remedies that don't work very well, because again, there's no large downstream system to tie them into. There's been an attempt here and there to correct the situation over the years, but it doesn't work very well because it just simply moves the problem without an organized, well-designed downstream system that moves the stormwater in an organized fashion to an outlet that can handle it. So in some cases, there's no storm sewers and they'll be installed for the first time. In other cases, there'll be a replacement of inadequate storm sewers.
Thank you. Any more questions?
I have a question. If this particular project is granted, will it incur more development that for the city of Hobart as far as for housing and commercial development?
No, unlikely. It solves existing problems that people are having in their neighborhoods right now. And it will be extended in future years with local funds in neighborhoods that continue to have problems just like this neighborhood does. But it allows the city to continue to make repairs and improvements to people that are already there, already paying taxes, and continuing to have problems with stormwater. But it doesn't spur development. It solves existing problems that people are having now.
Second question is this, is that did you consider extending your culverts or building larger ones, or are finding new different engineering methods rather than the amount of money that you're looking for this particular project?
Well,
some of the lesser amount.
There were, when we did the stormwater master plan, there were several different, at least four different options that we looked at, and looked at several other downstream outlets, and this was the only one that had the capability that to handle this amount of water in an adequate fashion. And unfortunately, there aren't a lot of adequate downstream outlets remaining in this particular area of north central Hobart. And this is the closest and the least costly. It's a very costly project, but this is the least costly.
Thank you.
And the costly project, just for everybody sitting out there, is total all in is $10.2 million.
Correct.
And the ask is for $500,000 a year for 10 years.
Yes. The city's paying about 58%.
At the location to the far west, at the dark blue line, that's at roughly 39th Avenue in Maxwell. Your proposed dimension would be what on that? I see you got some proposed sizes on toward the east. You have a proposed dimension for that one that flows into the blue line, the light blue line, which is where the proposed ditch is.
I don't think that's been determined yet. That probably would wait until the actual design.
The same thing with Geyer on 30, off 37 and Geyer as well.
Yes. These are the ones that actually have numeric values on them are estimates. Just basically preliminary estimates because the actual design has not been completed but we have some better ideas in that particular area. But the ones that do not have dimensions will require some more engineering work to determine that. Just like the actual sizes of the two-stage ditches will require. We don't have any cross-sections for those yet.
Okay, that was my second question. So does it in terms of the amount of storage, or I guess in this case temporary storage or accumulation, if currently you're saying that even if you got a half inch to a three quarters of an inch, that would be pretty disruptive.
It would. We will have significant storage in the two-stage ditches in the area to the west, and that's why we're not putting storm sewers through that area, because we're trying to make use of as much percolation as possible through that relatively sandy soil. Where the two-stage ditches are located is relatively sandy. Much of it is NIPSCO property, but the school also owns some property and the church owns some property in that area. Rather than accelerate that flow through that area and accelerate it in, again back into deep river, it will not contribute to the peak because it's going to percolate. So we're going to make full utilization out of as much of that water that can move into that sand layer as possible and be done with it, essentially. And also, from the standpoint of BMPs, it's also a very productive use of an area that can handle that sort of product.
Any other questions?
Why do you have such a large contingency?
Because that's what they do.
I mean, you have a 30% contingency. I'm failing to recognize why you would need such a large contingency.
Because the design has not been...
Well, you have 20% for engineering. Yeah, I mean, you have $3.6 million in contingency and engineering fees on $6.5 million of construction. It seems out of whack to me.
Interesting. I'm in construction. If somebody was going to tell me I'm going to build a $10 million building and I got to pay, you know, $4 million for engineering, seems excessive, and contingencies. I mean, the true cost, you know, it doesn't add up to me, but, it's just based off the top of my head.
It's probably based because of the fact that it's based on a plan versus a design, an actual design.
There's also a statement that you have in the description here. It says, project will also clear the Stinky Creek channel downstream of the outfall and perform bank stabilization of the channel where needed. Do we have a number for that portion of the project? I don't see that in this breakdown.
No.
I thought this was flat and nothing was moving. There is actual movement here?
There's a portion of it that's flat, and there's a portion of it right beyond the ridge that drops off very quickly. It's a combination of both. We have a particular problem where we have a very flat area that floods frequently and very difficult to move water through. And then as soon as you get past the ridge, obviously you have several feet of fall in just a few blocks. So you have an erosion issue at that point. It's the same ridge as we have right outside the door.
Okay, gentlemen, any other questions for this?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That was interesting. So there's another presentation, Mr. Repay.
There is. Hopefully that works.
It's all about the AV this time?
It's all about the AV.
So next up is the Lake County Parks. Tom, how would you say that word? Tritsis?
Tritsis.
Huh?
Tritsis.
Tritsis. Certus Land Acquisition Application. And the second one for Curtis Kostakis Land Acquisition. So I would assume we're talking about land acquisitions by the Park Department. Whom is going to help us understand what's going on?
Well, give me a second.
Evening. It'll be me, Craig Zanstra, Superintendent of Planning and Development for Lake County Parks.
What's that? I hope so. Which one do you need? Open file? Is yours pen?
Yeah.
I'll straighten it out. What do you want?
Five.
Which one do you want?
For anybody that's concerned, it's 5-0. Bad guys.
Unless you're a Sox fan. Sorry. I think we need a wider screen.
The town will be putting in an application for us to pay for a wider screen.
That would be pretty modest.
Yeah, I think so. I think we don't. You shouldn't even have to do the paperwork. I would think just for the, you know, the general, you know, goodwill, we should help with that.
It's a little bit awkward, but it gets you to the point, right?
You're right.
Is this okay?
Yeah.
No, you're fine. I just want to make sure that I hit the right button so you
perfect.
I am. I'm nervous because it isn't showing on the screen, so I'm really nervous.
All right.
All good then?
Whenever you're ready, I think we're going to be good.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Craig Zanstra, Lake County Parks. Wanted to go over a few different land acquisition projects we have going on. First, I guess it's a little hard to see, but this is, our Lake County. It's our open space plan. Deep River, cursor, Deep River is on the very east side of the county. Deep River County Park, we're looking at, there's no cursor.
You good luck. Just go up to the screen.
I'm trying to get this to work. There you go.
Okay. Well, anyway, Deep River is on the east side of the county. Route 30 bisects the park. We're looking at right now about 1,400 acres at Deep River County Park. Here's a blow-up of the view of the property we're acquiring, or has been acquired, actually. The property is on both sides, well, on the north side of Route 30. You can see in the south side, Deep River Water Park. We came to the commission a couple years ago to acquire property just to the east of the water park, about a 30-acre parcel, which we did acquire. This actually is on the north side, so what we're trying to do, if you can see, on both sides of Route 30 is link both sides of the park. You got about 700 acres on both sides of 30. We're trying to link them for recreation, open space, water quality, all kinds of good stuff. So it kind of gives you a good purview of what we're trying to do here at the county park. The key with this, I guess, a little partial description. Certus is the outlined in the purple, pinkish color. It's about a 11.5-12 acre parcel. It's got some oak hickory woods on it. It's got some old fallow field. It's got a Nipsco corridor that bisects it. It's also got probably of the 12 acres, it's got probably about 2 acres of wetland. There's a small stream that comes in from the west that flows through that property, which dumps in the Deep River. Also, it's got a little bit of floodplain along the east side of the property. So it's got a little bit of wetland, a little bit of storage on it. A lot of it's upland area, though. But the goal with this property, as far as the outlook of it here, is to try and get it acquired and to get a corridor to connect both sides of 30, like I mentioned. Doing that's important for recreational purposes, also for water quality. The benefits for Deep River, I guess, are many for the Deep River watershed. First, you got 1,400 acres of open space within Deep River County Park. And that 1,400 acres, you probably got about 800 acres of floodplain along Deep River. Deep River through the county park, actually from Colorado Street in Maryville all the way to the start of Lake George, just north of 61st and Hobart. That's your only remaining natural stream in Lake County that has been dredged, straightened, or moved throughout its lifetime. It's still got its natural meandering character through the county park. So you've got a large floodplain that stores a lot of water after flood events, which is key. Also, a couple years ago, IDEM and NERPC did a water quality study of Turkey Creek and Deep River. The best water quality in Deep River and Turkey Creek is right here in the county park. Because you've got a natural meandering river through the park, sediment filters out. You've got, during flood events, water that can spread out in the floodplain. So because of that, you've got great water quality. We've got a lot of biodiversity within the park, whether it's plants, insects, birds, animals, amphibians, reptiles. So a lot of good stuff in there, and that helps preserve some of that. We had a couple of different support letters in this project from Matt Lake from Maryville Stormwater, also from Joe Axel from NERPC. They both recognize not just the 2 acres of wetland that's part of this parcel, but also the upland part of it that's going to stay undeveloped, and it's going to be, the Oak Hickory Woods will stay. We'll do some enhancement, probably plant more trees in the coming years. Also, some of the grassland in the property will be restored or kept natural. So this property and some of the upland around the county park is just as important as some of the floodplain, because you're keeping some of that water from getting into the river. We're holding a lot of water back in wetland areas around the park, so this project in itself helps preserve some of that natural corridor along Deep River, which is very key because there's not many areas of open space of this size in Lake County, so it's very important from that regard. Flood control, like I mentioned, with all the acres of floodplain within the county park is key to preserve as much as we can. Also, the recreational benefits. Someday there might be or will be a trail that probably goes from the north part of Deep River down to the south part. So this property could very well see some sort of either natural surface trail, potentially maybe an asphalt trail that will have a bridge or an underpass over Route 30 or under Route 30 to connect both ends of the park. So that in itself is important just for the recreational side of it. Also, as far as the plans go on the site, we've got... And I'll kind of go to a couple other different slide shots I showed too. This is put together by DNR, and if you look up to the top, the pink section, that's the Hobart Prairie Grove area of Hobart Prairie Grove in Hobart, which is part of your mitigation project for the locale. That the Hobart Prairie Grove area, which kind of encompasses both sides of the Oak Savannah Trail around 65, you've got over 1,000 acres of open space right now at Hobart Prairie Grove. Deep River County Park, which is down to the bottom, which encompasses down into Porter County a little bit, about 1,400 acres. So this area right here, this corridor between Hobart Prairie Grove and Deep River is key, because you're going to potentially someday have, 3,000 acres of open space in this area, which is going to hold a lot of water back. It's going to preserve the natural floodplain, the natural meandering characteristic of Deep River through here. And also provide a lot of benefits recreationally and also for habitats for a lot of different species that are native to our area here. The key is going to be, of course, acquiring some more property between 51 and Hobart and 61st Avenue in Hobart, trying to provide some sort of corridor between these two to link them. But we've got a lot of partners working on potentially hopefully making that happen someday. So you can see this is just one large area of open space that is going to be added onto in the future. As far as the potential project budget, the property's on Route 30, so we had 2 appraisals done. You're getting sale comparisons from down on Route 30 and 65, so the property is over $30,000 an acre because it's on Route 30, but we've got some partners already that have committed funds. Indiana Lake Michigan Coastal Project has already committed $150,000 for the acquisition. The total cost is $314,500. The property's already been purchased. We worked with the Conservation Fund to purchase the property back in January because the property owner couldn't wait any longer and we didn't want them to wait any further. So we got a mortgage on the property right now to hold it until this Lake Michigan Coastal Grant. We're able to close, sign the grant, and then apply that money to the purchase of the property. Lake County Parks is committed to putting in $82,250 from a bond fund that was approved last year by our Lake County Council. The County Council approved a $12 million bond issue last summer for Lake County Parks. Of that $12 million, the Park Board committed $2 million, and the Council supported that for land acquisition in Lake County. So this is one of the land acquisition projects that's part of that bond issue. We're asking for $82,250 from Local Commission to help us with the match. Also, Lake County Park Board already has put in $30,000 or will by the end of the project between the plat of survey, appraisals, phase one environmental, title policy, mortgage interest from with the conservation fund, and, you know, attorney costs. So, you know, it does add up. Just to show you a couple of photos real quick, this is the east side of the property. It's hard to see. This was actually last December, one of the few snows we had last year, but Deep River, the small stream, flows in just to the north right here. This is looking from the edge of the wetland, upland area on this surface property, looking north, and Deep River kind of flows back in along it. It's a beautiful stretch of the stream, very natural, very quiet, both sides. Currently, right now, Porter County Parks is working on buying some property, or actually they're getting some property donated to them on the other side of the Porter County line, just next to this property. So we've got other partners working on it. This is along Route 30 here, just coming into Lake County from Porter, going westbound. This is looking at that property on the north side. You can see the mature oaks and hickories, which are all going to stay. And in long term, of course, you know, we'll be doing more restoration enhancement work in there. This could also be the location of the future bridge or crossing at Route 30 when the land acquisition is all complete. I guess the key for this parcel is going to be, what I want to stress, I guess, is that long term, this property is not going to be developed other than potentially a trail access in the park. Because of the grant funds we have, anytime you use Lake Michigan Coastal Program grant funds, that's funds through NOAA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. So there will be a conservation easement placed on this property, so it can never be developed. It's always going to be naturalized and stay that way. So it's not going to be developed. It's going to stay the way it is. It's going to keep providing the type of flood storage in some area of it, and also just the natural buffer for this property. And the benefits it's going to it's providing right now for the watershed and for the river itself are going to keep going throughout its lifetime. If you look at it, I mean, there's no better value for flood storage than open space. I mean, there's no better because it's always going to be there in perpetuity, and it's not, nothing else is going to happen with it. So, so I guess that's kind of my main points here with this project. So, yeah, I got one more.
I'm not helping. I'm a little sorry. Was it another disc?
You know, it's just the other one right below it. One in the,
is it a part of the same thing?
No, it's not.
So it's here?
No, it's when you pulled this up off the drive that it came. Yeah, I
gotta see it.
You got it.
Right. I got it. I like it. Everyone wants to watch that Cubs game.
One right above it.
They already lost, so sorry. Oh,
there we go. All right, thank you.
Hold on. Boy, I'd love to. We're buying a new one from here so we can see the whole screen.
We'll be glad.
That's wrong, customized. Oh shit, never mind. I'm quitting. You should just get me out of this thing. Yeah. Sorry. Why is it doing this? It's working supposedly.
Why isn't it going?
Zoom to fit. Stop laughing. It's just zoom to fit, right?
Just click outside the box.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. All righty. Thank you.
What, the bar?
Yeah, the bottom line. This mouse is the challenge.
Everyone that attends these meetings normally understands the fun of this.
This is an AV problem?
Shush. If you had a lot for it in the budget, I would be able to afford something else. What's that?
You can't move from the left. You should be able to.
You want this one?
Yeah.
I thought we tried that.
No, that'll work if you hit it. Yep, there you go.
All right. Hey.
Perfect. Appreciate it.
All right, here we go. This is the Curtis Costakis land acquisition at Deep River. We got two separate ones, but we combined them for the project. We'll go to the... Sorry about the view here, Oak Ridge. I apologize. I couldn't get this to straighten out earlier. Oak Ridge, actually, Oak Ridge Prairie right now, we've acquired probably 300 acres at Oak Ridge in the last probably 3 or 4 years. So Oak Ridge right now is about 1,000 acres. Between Colfax and Griffith and Hendrick Street and Maryville, or actually Chase Street and Maryville. So the key to this project is down, you can see in the red, in the northeast corner of the park near Chase Street and 53rd or Main Street in Griffith, Maryville actually. The key to this project, I guess, describing the two parcels, they're not real huge. They're 1.3, the other 3.6 acres, so about 7 acres total. They both preserve, probably of that 7 acres, you're looking at probably about 5 or 6 acres of wetland. The rest is black and white oak savanna, remnant savanna that's there. So you got some wetland, you got some upland habitat. The key to this parcel, I guess, this acquisition is the park board had acquired 100 acres on the outside of Chase Street about 5 years ago, and we're trying to link that 100 acres that bisects the Oak Savanna Trail, or the Oak Savanna Trail bisects the 100 acres on the east side of Chase Street. So this is going to help connect the main part of Oak Ridge Prairie to that Chase Street Savannah complex. Also, it's got some existing wetland in it and some really good soils for restoration and some really good plant communities on it. It also provides a lot of flood storage. So, not a lot, but I mean, it does provide some flood storage. So it's doing its job. We've got willing sellers that were paying property taxes on it. They couldn't really do anything with the property, and they came to us a couple years ago that they wanted to sell it. And we're looking at buffering that side of the park. So the key there is Oak Ridge, in general, is a large park that, harbors a lot of different biodiversity, but the key also is it holds a lot of water. You've got Johnson Ditch that bisects Oak Ridge Prairie that drains a lot of Cal Township, comes through the park and drains into Turkey Creek on the south side. That in itself is important because Oak Ridge, with the sandy soils, holds a lot of water back. So I'm sure, we've never figured out the exact amount, but you're basically holding hundreds of acre feet of water back in this park during rainy periods, there's no doubt. This is basically a screenshot, Google shot. I'm sorry that it's not super great, but just to kind of show you what we're doing here at Oak Ridge Prairie. Oak Ridge Prairie is in the middle. You can see Hoosier Prairie is just to the left of that. We're trying to think here again, big picture. You got Hoosier Prairie that right now is about 850 acres from Kennedy Avenue back towards Griffith. And then Oak Ridge Prairie at 1,000 acres. And then actually Hoover Prairie Grove is in a line just to the east of that. So you've got, Hoosier at 850, Oak Ridge 1,000 acres, another over 1,000 acres of Hoover Prairie Grove. You've got the largest quarter of open space in the north part of Lake County right through there. Any property we're acquiring around these parcels, these parks, are benefit for flood storage because you're holding a lot of water back in these areas. And you can see they're basically surrounded by development. From Munster, Highland, down to Dyer, St. John, the whole west side of the county is pretty heavily developed and there's not a lot of open space being added. So this is your really first big chunk of open space in this part of the county. So it's going to be here forever. These acquisitions, the same as the last ones, with the partnerships we have on them, we'll have conservation easements placed on them. There will be no development on them. So the benefits you see now from the flood storage and from the habitat and recreation will be there through perpetuity on these properties. Our project budget for these, the total project cost, you can see real estate's a little cheaper in this area. We're looking at almost $30,000 total for both the parcels. We've got approval on a Lake Michigan Coastal Grant for about half the property costs. The Nature Conservancy has also put forth about $3,250 for the project, and the reason for that, the Nature Conservancy has a vested interest in Hoosier Prairie and Oak Ridge Prairie because of large biodiversity benefits in those park sites. So they, anytime there's an acquisition in those areas, they always will put funds towards it. Sometimes 500 acres, sometimes 1,000. It's not a huge amount, but every little bit helps. We're asking from the locale for $11,625 for this project. You can see some of the other costs and appraisals, plat, survey, attorney cost, title policy that Lake County Parks covers. So with that, Kind of wraps it up. This is just a couple shots, and again, last winter, I took them before our coastal grants were due, so this is actually part of the Curtis property. There's a trailer park, if you're familiar with the Griffith Maryville Airport on Main Street. Just to the east of the Griffith Airport, there's a trailer park, and behind the trailer park is the Curtis property. So you got some upland there, and then this is one of the large wetland complexes behind it. And pretty good shape. There's no phragmites in it. It's got cattails. It's got a shrub swamp in it with a lot of good stuff. So it provides a lot of benefit to the park. This, again, is part of that same wetland complex, basically in the corner between, you know, Chase Street and Main Street, the confluence. Another shot, this is behind the trailer park. This is some of the upland habitat, black oak, white oak in here, some black gum, some really nice tree species, and some good understory also. So with that, just a really neat acquisition for the county park. Looking at it long term, you know, one of the benefits, I guess, of Oak Ridge, the biggest benefits is for the surrounding community, is north of Oak Ridge Prairie, you've got Calumet Township, which everybody in Cal Township's on a well. Generally, if you look at the way groundwater flows in the Lake Michigan shed in Lake County, it flows to the north from the Valparaiso Moraine, which is basically about 30. All this water is flowing north of the groundwater is, so Oak Ridge, Hoosier, and some of these areas, especially Oak Ridge, is key because we've got a large area where a lot of infiltration takes place with the wetlands. And so that's helping the people in Cal Township and further north because they're on wells. So our open space is actually helping recharge the aquifer and the water table for those people with their wells in the north part of the Cal Township area. So it's not just the open space, it's also helping with water quality and also water availability for people, not just the open space as far as habitat, other things. There's just many different benefits for everybody. And then also, looking at some other potential I guess parts of the project moving forward would be, you know, maybe some restoration work on the property, maybe a trail that might connect to that property east of Chase Street. So we've got a lot of different options there as far as using this property long term. But the key is it's going to stay open space. It's going to keep providing the flood control benefits and the water quality benefits for this area. And there's no better cost effective way of doing it but acquiring property like this for a county park site. So that's it. Any questions, I'd be glad to answer those.
All right. Yeah, I'm surprised.
All right, thank you for that. Questions for this young man from the County Parks Department?
The one out on 30.
Yeah.
That already been acquired?
Yeah.
So
we're
just looking for a reimbursement, is that what?
Well, what we did is we had to go to the conservation fund, and they helped us purchase the property up front, so we still have to pay the conservation fund back, so we got a mortgage with them. And so,
hey, Jody, we got to leave one of those open.
Yeah, nice low interest rate. So, yeah, the property is purchased that way because the County Park Board can't buy a property until we're signatory in our coastal grant. And the coastal grant's been really slow this year with NOAA for some reason. So until we get our federal grant signed for that $150,000, we can't close on it. So once we get federal approval, which should be any day, then we can close on it and then, you know, hopefully use some of these funds to match our bond funds for the property purchase.
Okay. Yeah. I'm seeing a trend from the Parks Department to come and look here as to us as a grantor for doing acquisition of open land. Is there anything that you can do in some of the more high visibility challenged areas to assist with other areas as a part of this, or is it going to be just come and look for, like, perfect example is the Turkey Creek Golf Course. You mentioned Turkey Creek a couple of times. It'd be nice if you could help us with some of the things that we have problems where there's a lot of homes currently, because the flood control really has got to deal with the residents that are paying the taxes for all this stuff, not so much for a lot of the other issues, which are vitally important, I understand. But first and foremost is making sure things don't happen in people's basements.
Oh, yeah.
So we're trying to figure out how that mix is. And, you know, this is the second and third go around now, and it seems to be it's more about doing land acquisitions to add to the park system. And help me with that.
Yeah, if you look at the SEH plan that was done for you guys, I think the key to that plan is Upland Storage, what they mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at Upland Storage, that's what the County Park Department's doing. We had one project that was approved through the commission. That was at our future Beaver Dam site, west of Crown Point. It's a 400-acre site, and you approved a large wetland restoration project, which we're holding probably 800 acre feet of flood storage back, which is good. That's what you want to do. So as far as Turkey Creek goes, yeah, I think in the long term, we'd be willing to look at different things in Turkey Creek to help maybe, you know, with different flood control aspects. I mean, you look at it right now, next to Turkey Creek, you've got Innsbruck Country Club. Well, Innsbruck's been for sale probably three or four times in the last 20 years. And so there's nothing saying that maybe somewhere down the line we can maybe work with Innsbruck and maybe combine the courses and then use some of the flood, some of the main corridors through the golf courses is for more flood control. I mean, there's a lot of options I think you can look at in that, just that area right there.
Yeah, and I understand. And long-term things are great, and woulda, coulda, shoulda is also important. However, you know, we're looking at trying to solve some of the deferred maintenance challenges within the watershed now. And trying, you know, Beaver Dam, you brought that up. That's perfect. One of the things we always look at is where's the water coming into the project? Where's the water leaving the project? For Beaver Dam, as we get through this, it gets to be more and more critical. You know, where's that water coming from? I mean, Beaver Dam Ditch, that's the primary way for water to get from the west side of 65 to the east side of 65 to go into downtown Hobart to get to Burns Ditch to get to the lake. So that's the process. So, yes, it's nice to make sure we keep those things clear, but we also need to make sure there's other avenues that are available and have between the surveyor's office, the parks department, and all the other communities that are involved in this to look at the big picture and not just always kind of work through this. Because, you know, I'm all for this, but, you know, it just seems that we're another grantor. Yeah. At just like the Lake Michigan Coastal Commission, that you're looking for money to buy land, and we're looking for some partnerships with the communities and helping us with a lot of the big picture stuff, like you mentioned. I didn't hear any of that. Having the land open, it's already open. Now we're just looking at it. What confirm that it's always going to be open?
Well, just because it's open space now doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. I think we've seen that in Lake County so far. I mean, Lake County has, if you look at open space numbers in Lake County, we've got probably 20,000 acres total in open space. Seems like a lot, a big number. But you look next door in Cook County, Cook County's probably got 95,000 acres of open space. I mean, they got so much money. Will County's probably 50,000. And so, I mean, granted, these are small parcels, but that's why I was trying to show you the Hoosier Prairie area, the Oak Ridge Prairie together on that Google map view, because this is just the 7 acres that's being acquired. This is the 130 acres we acquired at Oak Ridge Prairie last year, which we're not asking for any money from you guys on, but now Oak Ridge is about 1,000 acres of mostly natural open space that's never going to be developed. So, I mean, if Oak Ridge Prairie hadn't, you know, the park board hadn't started acquiring land at Oak Ridge probably back in the late 70s, you know, that property would probably mostly be developed by now, or a good chunk of it, so that would be more water going down Turkey Creek in the Deep River and so forth. So, I know, big picture-wise, that's what we're trying to do, is add to these larger open space areas, which in the long term is going to store more water and keep any potential development out of there. Even if it's a wetland area along Deep River Turkey Creek, I mean, there's been plenty of developments that have filled in wetlands and mitigated somewhere else. So just because it's a wetland, it's still going to be developed. I mean, it happens all the time. So
yeah, wetland mitigation, they can understand that. Has any hydrology studies been done on any of these county parks?
Yeah, the one I mentioned to you, the Nature Conservancy and DNR had done a study of Hoosier Prairie and Oak Ridge Prairie to study the water flow, the groundwater flow from the south to the north. And the reason
that's Main and Kennedy, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And so basically they were studying that to see where the water goes and what the benefits were of preserving that property at Hoosier and Oak Ridge. And so they looked into it, and they saw, you know, they basically just studied the groundwater flow.
It all goes to the Lake Michigan.
Correct.
Well, I could have done that for you.
Well, no, I know that, but, you know, if you go ahead and develop those areas, you're going to mess up the groundwater flow, and you're going to have more water leaving on the surface and not infiltrating into the ground. So there's a huge benefit to keeping these areas open and not developed. I mean, we could develop all of them, but then, you know, you look long-term, it's probably going to add more water to the main drains here. So, you know, I think big picture, you know, we're trying to put these large areas of open space together, which in themselves, you know, hold lots of water. And, you know, can I put an exact number on how many acre feet we store? Not right now. I mean, maybe long-term we could look at that, but, you know, we're not into doing studies right now. We're trying to get things done, get these properties bought and start, you know, preserving them and let the benefits, you know, take over its lifetime. Because with these properties, I mean, you know, if you put water in for storm sewers and other things, you know, digging ditches, creating ditches, that's fine and dandy. You need to do that. But, you know, this kind of thing is cost-benefit wise because you have the upfront cost, you know, when you buy the property. But long-term, you're not going to be doing a lot of maintenance on these properties. They're going to be doing what they've always been doing, holding water, you know, providing habitat, you know, recreation, that kind of thing. You're not going to have to go in and do, you know, work 100 years from now to restore the area because it is what it is.
Yeah, we have a problem doing maintenance things, obviously.
Right. I mean, you see where the maintenance goes. So, I mean, these kind of properties, you're never going to have to maintain them because it's open space and it is what it is. It's always going to be that way. It'll be owned in perpetuity, and I don't believe the county park board's going anywhere. So, you know, we're looking to adding more property actually in these areas. So, you know, the benefit's even going to be more pronounced in the coming years. So, and that's why I showed that map around Hoosier and Oak Ridge, because, you know, basically you look around in both those areas. If you go out of Hoosier Prairie on Main Street, you're going to a different world as you go to Route 41. I mean, it's one of the last large open space areas in the west side of the county, and I don't see any more further west from there. So this is what we've got, and we're trying to add to what we've got right now. So,
any other questions for this gentleman?
Yes, sir. I've been looking at your proposed acquisition of this property. The property that would exist on then on the eastern boundary all the way to Oak Savannah Trail, what is that? Is that available? Do you know if it's available? Is there something that prohibit connecting that parcel?
The one on the east side of Chase Street?
Yes.
Yeah, that was already purchased by the park board about 8 years ago. And so that property is purchased, it's preserved, it's going to stay that way. So what we're trying to do is link that parcel with the main area of Oak Ridge Prairie. It's linked in a way with the Oak Savannah Trail, but we're trying to link it through Chase Street a little further south. So that's the thing. Linking this, then you're linking 1,000 acres of Oak Ridge Prairie now to another 100 acres next to it, and potentially to the south, we're buying some more property to link all the way to Turkey Creek, hopefully. So you're talking long-term. I mean, I could see Oak Ridge Prairie in the next, you know, 10 years, we could probably get Oak Ridge Prairie close to 1,500 acres, which is huge because, you know, the goal would be to get down to Turkey Creek and preserve even more. We've got the Ivan Gatlin Nature Preserve, which is at the end of Burr Street, just by the Prairie State Subdivision in Schererville. That property was donated to us years ago through the drainage board, so that's a 40-acre property that hugs Turkey Creek and it's a big flood control area. So, you know, that kind of thing we're trying to link up with the county parks of the north. So
now you have Lake County Fishing Game that's right across the street as
correct.
Well.
Yeah.
How many acres is that, do you know?
That's about, I think, 20 or 30 acres. And then to the east or west of that property, you know, Cruiser Trucking had just finished up sand mining, one of their last areas there. And that eventually is going to be turned into probably a put-and-take fishing lake also, I would assume. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else, gentlemen? It's that you're looking at possibly acquiring property going to the Turkey Creek, Oak Ridge Prairie, south of the prairie.
Yeah.
And how many acres do you think you're looking at?
Well,
because there's a lot of undeveloped land over there.
Now
there's subdivisions popping up south along that creek.
There are, because the Griffith side, the St. John Township side, south of Oak Ridge. You know, Griffith's got that slanted for development, and I would assume some of that would be developed in the coming years. That's what they would like to see.
It's already started.
Yeah, but right, you know, the Trail Creek subdivision, which is on the, you know, that would be what, it's on the west, both sides of the Beer Lackawanna Trail.
Right.
And then they're doing another phase right now. So,
correct.
So you're going to see some of that, I agree. But then, you know, the Maryville side, the Ross Township side, you're not quite seeing the same development in Maryville that you're seeing in St. John Township. So right now there's a 140-acre farm from the Austin family for sale between Hendrick Street and Griffith. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the kind of property we'd be looking at buying eventually to add more. If you got that property, you're almost up to Turkey Creek at that point. So, and then you're connecting the whole park to that whole area. So,
right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Have you looked at, like, Shirley Hines Trust for these acquisitions for open space as opposed to just looking for grants and have it all coming under the purview of the county?
We partner with Shirley Hines on a lot of our projects. They help us with some different grant administration, things like that, with some and also oversight on some of our properties with management and so forth. But Shirley Hines, you know, they're over a 4-county area buying property. So, I mean, what they buy, they're looking at a larger area. And, you know, their funds are limited also to a certain extent. So as far as getting money from them to help buy property, it's a little more difficult. They wouldn't be one of our main I guess, partners for land acquisition. But, you know, they do a lot of what we do, I guess, and they do it well. Yeah, as far as land act, they kind of do their own thing. And then, you know, but we have, you know, we acquire some properties within the same framework as far as, you know, the DNR, Nature Conservancy, and some of these larger organizations that have areas of open space that they have documented that should be preserved that for future generations. Well, we're buying some of the same property from the same plans they are. It's just, you know, we use some of the same funds, but since they're a non-for-profit 501c3, we have to do a little different thing as far as some land act. They can't get a coastal grant, we can, but then, you know, they can use some other partners to get funds acquired also. And one of the big deals is, you know, the state of Indiana, they've had a great program the last 10 years through Indiana Heritage Trust, which is through the sale of environmental license plates. That money from your environmental plate goes directly into land acquisition. And we use that to acquire probably a couple thousand acres of our park system to help us. That was one of our partners. And Mitch Daniels, when he was in office, he put $20 million in to a land acquisition program and had Eli Lee match it with $10 million, so $30 million total. That money just got used up. So we've been talking to our state legislators and a lot of our partners have because, you know, the state's putting a lot of money in economic development in Lake County with the Westlake Rail Project, which is very much needed. But also, I've been arguing to the state, we need to also put some money into open space acquisition because, you know, with all this development going on, you've got to offset that with some sort of open space. And that's why we're coming to you also because right now the state money just dried up. That last $30 million was spent on land acquisition. And the state's talking about putting more money in it. But that was one of our big pots of funds for helping us buy property. And right now, that has closed up. And, you know, I mean, I am coming to you for money for some land act, but I think there's a valid benefit to the locale commission as far as, you know, I mentioned before, you know, just holding the water, keeping it open space, not developing again. And, I mean, there's a lot of benefits long term, I think. So.
Excellent. Yeah. Anything else? All right. Thank you, Craig.
Yeah.
Mr. Repay, proposal from Aerial Solutions.
Well, we've discussed this. This will be the third meeting. And I was told to put it on the agenda, I believe, this time, and hopefully maybe there'll be a decision made on whether we want to do some or just move on. I mean, basically, for those new here, it's the ability to see areas within our system with the use of a drone, document it, mark up areas that need assistance, put out that work order, and then ultimately, you know, see and compare it year over year. But as I've mentioned to you, it's a tool. They came to us, I know Mr. Gazdecki was a part of the presentation. Initially when they came, 6-9 months ago.
Commissioner, what would you like to see done with this?
Well, Mr. Chairman, this information as it was presented to me would allow us to survey the entire Little Calumet River from the state line to I-65 with videographed survey, you know, aerial view of the entire system. It would allow us to establish a baseline of low water marks, high water marks, identify all the potential blockages, problem areas. The way it was presented to me, the data that they can extrapolate after a number of surveys are done is going to give us the ability to predict inundation. I mean, granted, we already have some of this, but where I see it going beyond just the Little Cal system is when we get to the Beaver Dam Ditch situation, we get to Turkey Creek, we get to Hart's Ditch. You have a pretty non-invasive method of acquiring data without boots on the ground, so to speak. I mean, I think it could be done much quicker. You're going to get elevations. You're going to get, you know, theoretically you can get flows, like I said earlier, inundation based on certain events. it's much more than just taking pictures and showing blockages. But it's going to take some time to develop a baseline of data.
Have we gone back then to see if they can work on their number and maybe expand beyond just the federal project parameters and extend maybe just to our two primary tributaries, Deep River and Heart Ditch?
I have had no conversation with them since the initial presentation.
I don't think they'll have a problem with doing that. They've done the
number. Oh, I want it for the same money, though.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck.
The reality is, in prior years, what we would do is go up with NIPSCO when they were going up to check their high transmission lines and taking our own camcorder when they had camcorder. Now you do it.
Camcorder?
Hey, look, it was 2010. What do you want me to tell you? and video it. And that's when you say, oh, well, this is the location. The evidence and the information that they provide is invaluable. This isn't Bill's kid that I, you know, got from, you know, Best Buy who's putting up a
GoPro on his
on a drone. This is a real deal. The most important thing is these have to be licensed pilots because of the proximity to the Gary Airport and where you're flying. There's strict regulations on that. So I understand that, you know, I'm going to go hire Bill's kid, and Bill's a nice guy and he could do it for half the cost, but you're also...
No, I mean, I understand
what Bill's
that
kid does.
From the surveying standpoint, I mean, the federal project parameters was surveyed by the Army Corps of Engineers, and we've talked about it previously, and it needs to be updated over time. Is that true? Now, would this be a tool that would augment or replace boots on the ground surveying as it relates to updating what was done, I don't know, when they first did it in the 80s? I mean, who knows when they did it?
I think the technology, and you can talk if you want, the technology is constantly changing when it comes to this type of information gathering. So I don't know. I mean, I know that they talked about doing the bathymetric survey, which is being able to tell where the sediment on the bottom of the river is compared to the water level that it currently stands.
Right.
So they can do that, which is otherwise done with someone in a boat or what other floating device. It's a tool, and we had this conversation. Is it 100%? Is it easier? As we talked, what's visible? If you're only familiar, and the people here are familiar with only the parts of the Little Kamet River that are in Highland and Munster, yeah, you can look across the river and go, well, I can just walk across the river and I can see everything that's going on. As you go east past, I'll say Klein Avenue, maybe even probably east of Kennedy, yeah, probably Klein, it's a lot more difficult. Now, you can go paddle out there, and I'm sure people are going to come and say, I can paddle and I can give you the same documentation over the same information. And that's wonderful. And I don't know if they can do bathymetric survey, but you have that option as well. This was something that was brought to us. Myself and Tom had talked to him for 6 months ago, maybe. And you know, ultimately, it would lead to Hart's Ditch, where, let's just use Hart's Ditch example. I'm sure Deep River is pretty close to that, where you have houses that are right up against it. Your local areas that you can access easily are difficult, except for bridge crossings, whereas this is, you're flying over the top. I don't know where all the problems are in Hart's Ditch unless a neighbor happens to pick up the phone and go.
There's no access. I mean, that where I'm thinking, it makes more sense to look at it from the standpoint of Hart's Ditch and Deep River. We can't get there. Nobody ever had it as a regulated drain. The Fed's never been there. I mean, nobody's run the whole system.
No, I mean,
all the people work in our little, you know, compartmentalized world in Lake County. So we're supposed to break down those walls.
And ultimately, that's where probably this leads to. This was just a proposal because we had the ability to show them what we had, show them the problems that we exist. I mean, in theory, probably you could cut back some of the number based off of the fact that you don't have to go necessarily west of Klein Avenue because of its proximity to the banks on either side. You can see any blockages. That's our number one concern, is seeing blockages that are out there. And you're not going to go out there every month. You're not going to go out there every 2 weeks. It just physically, we don't have it unless you're going to have a bunch of volunteers, which I'd be more than happy to have.
I do know this technology is used in mining applications, And I know that if you established a baseline of elevations within the boundaries of the river, of our levee, you would get a volume of area that's available for water to fill up the entire thing. If you, once you establish a baseline, let's say you do it the fall and the next fall and the next fall, you will know how much sediment's washing down from Hart's Ditch and filling up our basin. I do know that that is one of the tools that, and one of the results of what this system can do for you.
And I understand. I mean, our bigger problem is not identifying that type of thing, and our bigger problem is moving it, and, you know, as far as getting the sediment out. And, you know, I understand
right
the technology.
Now, people argue with us that it's natural part of the river. Well, it's not. It's, you know, it's washout from erosion. They erode it, and it's filling up, you know, our capacity to move the water.
Does it also have the capability, Tom, to do like an aerial topography? Is that
yes.
what we're doing as well?
Yes.
And how close can topography be done?
I'd have to go back. I mean, I think it's very accurate. Extremely accurate.
Foot or less?
It's more accurate than the LIDAR that's currently flown by DNR, which was done, I think, 2 years ago.
Which is 1 foot.
I think you have to buy down to the 1 foot. I think county only gets you 2 feet.
Right.
And that charge, just to do that, I believe we this was years ago when we did this, when we wanted to buy in for that extra information that they have, but they couldn't give us for an extra, it was like $100,000 for the whole county. But, I mean, it's technology, it's advancing. It's like if you had the camcorder, now you have your phone, and who knows what the heck you're going to be able to do.
Well, it's herbaceous. I mean, it really is.
I can tell you, look, you know, Hobart's still here, and Hobart would love to have this information just for, I'm sure, Lake George.
Absolutely.
Where the sediment that they
generate. They can take it out of that contingency number.
I'm going.
Anyways,
let's go.
So that's why it's still on the agenda. You can deal with it. You don't have to. I put it on.
I got another question for Tom. In the section of the training period, they talk about the hardware costs not included. I mean, I deal with that.
You know, I know that the drone that they're flying around with all the accessories that are on is somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000. Oh. So, and it changes monthly as far as what new gadget they can affix to it, what new capacity they have.
We don't own it. We're not going to own it. We won't fly it. The only thing that they ultimately said was at a point in time where if this goes down the line where they don't need a pilot, they will certify a few of us to be the pilot, and that it will be programmed if you sit at one point. Let's just say we're sitting at Broadway Bridge in Gary. You sit there, you could take it off from the top of your truck, and it will go to point B, which is your normal pinch point, and it will come back to point A. And that's what you do, and you don't have to hire the pilot. I don't know if that ever gets to that point, but his description of the expense of it and the size of it, it is not just a small little thing. It can withstand 40-mile-per-hour winds. And I said, the video that's on our website right now, if you look closely, the trees below it, I know what day they flew it on. It was June 20-something. That wind was pretty hefty on that day, and yet that picture is still clear, and they still have good documentation. So,
just so everybody knows, we're talking, I think, $85,000. So once you get the baseline, how often does it have to be updated? Is there a specific kind of timeline as it relates? Because, you know, beavers are, you know, they're busy, and, you know, water still flows downhill. So how often does it need to be done to have true data points to be able to help make decisions?
I would imagine you do it spring and fall, for the reasons being that the leaves are not on the trees and you have a better idea of what you can see.
Yeah.
The canopy gets pretty thick in certain areas that you'd have to, and they can't fly as low as you would have hoped, but they have a camera and the ability to get it, but they need to be able to see it.
Yeah, you would do it also maybe in the high of, you know, in a large event, so that you could see what actual true inundation.
Is there a cost beyond the initial? And that's what I'm trying to get my arms around here. Identify hardware equipment for purchase or lease with spare parts.
As Bill said, I think that
we're not involved in any of that, but
try
we're
to
still
get,
at that lease. What do we
try to get them back to the table and figure out some of our major concerns, figure out what the outlay is going to be.
figure out exactly what their services are capable of providing us and what that timeline and return on investment is.
And Dan, have you had a discussion with Surveyor Emerson about the possibility of partnering with him on this stuff?
I'm sure they'd love to partner, but who do you think is going to pay, with all due respect?
Yeah.
So I'm sure every community in Lake County and the watershed anywhere would love to have this information, because the amount of information you get, and as quickly as they can get it, they flew that part in 2 days, and they probably could have done it a lot quicker, but for the unfamiliarity with the problem. There's some places probably, and I'm not as familiar with it, south of Lake George, that they'd probably, people would love to have that information, but for people that can float down that area, but you can get it. It's real. They can go real time with it during an event. You can go real time with it anytime. Mm-hmm. They just chose to video it for us so that we could then show you guys and ultimately show the public what is there. So if anyone wants to see it, it's still up on our website as far as I checked this morning. I'm imagining a lot of people would love the information. It's whatever you want to pay for it is what it is. And the fly time, because you're paying for, I don't know what the class pilot is you have to have, but you know, because of the people that are not so nice in this world, you have to have some trained folks there doing the thing that they're supposed to be doing. And you have to have a spotter with them as well. You can never lose eyesight with your drone. Legally, that's not possible. And then you fly within a certain parameter of an airport with a control tower is a whole other ballpark.
Gotcha.
Good. So,
I'm sorry. Let me just answer this one question.
I'm not going to fly it.
Okay. First of all, I've seen the website and I think it's fantastic, and I'm all for new technology, especially if it's going to enhance our area. But I'm just curious, who's going to incur any liabilities? Is there any liabilities with this particular piece of equipment if it happens to go off track some kind of way?
So some of these concerns I directed back to U.S. Aerials, and their response here is the FAA Pilot Plan 107 certificate is obligatory for any UAV commercial operations in the U.S. The aerials pilot in Chicago are certified and insured for third-party liability up to $1 million to operate in the U.S. Aerials has obtained the necessary FAA waiver to operate in the Class D Gary airspace, which 70% of our river resides within.
Okay, thank you.
So thank you. Got $1 million worth of coverage. They're licensed to fly in that airspace.
So, okay. Yeah, my question was, so the video on the website is sort of like a phase one or a proof of concept part A, so to speak. And I think with the $28,000 additional surveys, we're not going to own the equipment. If we decide we're not going to own the equipment, so we're going to pay the $28,000 for additional surveys. And then I guess my proof of concept part B question would be, historically, Aerial Solutions has done this elsewhere, apparently.
So,
and how, what's the frequency of flyover or changes rate that they would expect to actually, you know, fly over, conduct another survey, how many times per year? So what would this additional phase two $28,000 look like from a frequency standpoint?
I try to answer it. There is no, it's our call. We make the call as to when and how often. If you ask me for this summer, there's no events that sort of caused anything that was disruptive or a tornado or anything that for that matter.
I'm going back to maybe I'm not being facetious. I'm going back to perhaps the beavers activity
answer would still be the same. Fall and spring. You would if you do the fall, look, the animals are more apt to be going a little bit crazy here during the wintertime to protect themselves. Springtime, because things happen in spring, Mother Nature happens. Summertime, they tend to slow down a bit. My experience, I'm not a nature preserve person, so don't hold me to any of that, but that's just what we see. For instance, right now, we're getting more and more calls of beavers and other animals that are burrowing, knocking down trees of large amount. And we're ultimately going to go back into hard ditch here probably early November to take out a whole nother slew of trees that have come down.
They're getting ready for winter. And it's just, I see it as just another tool for those places that somebody can't paddle or ride their bike or the piece of equipment can't get to.
Yeah, and I guess something perhaps a little bit more concrete from Aerial Solutions, if Tom and your correspondents, if they can give an idea as to how many times per year a municipality or whatever it is, a governmental unit that actually uses it.
We would be their first experience with waterways in the United States.
Okay. All right.
They indicated to us that, yes, we can elect to do it whenever we like, but the more often that it's done, you know, at least twice a year, the more data that you're going to be able to accumulate and then exactly.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to go after them with some of these things we talked about, but is it safe to assume that we're somewhat interested in pursuing this as a viable alternative? Dave?
I think we should just rule on it. Go for it.
What about you?
Yes. Well, I think it would be a very valuable tool to add to our...
What about you?
I like the idea and the concept.
I would say yes. However, if we're going to prove their proof of concept, I think that we should certainly get a better figure.
Bet. Okay. If there's things that you guys can think about after we're done, let's kind of pull together that hopefully give you 5 business days. If not, then forever hold your peace. So when we go back to this company, we can go through that.
I will say this. I mean, they give you a pretty bullet point by bullet point list of what they're going to do for you for the
$85,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw it. I just... And in terms of proof of concepts, if they would have come and if the response, I guess, would have been, yeah, we've done this in Oregon and we've done it for a waterway in Oregon, whether it's similar or not similar to, you know, what's right here in Lake County with the Little Calumet watershed, I would have probably been a little bit more apt to say, yeah, let's see what their activity was. And it's not necessarily based on did anybody respond to it, because we can't, you know, that can't be legislated, but, you know, what influences, you know, did the accumulation of not responding to it have this impact at the, you know, no accumulation because corrective actions were addressed and, you know, this is how it was maintained. That it's just no additional information to actually substantiate it at the moment. And I see the bullet points.
Okay. Anything else on this one? Got a game plan? Put some ideas, if you have them, to Mr. Repay, and then we'll go after them and see if we can't work on the number. Anything else on that one? All right. I do the other issues, new business. Commissioner Castellanos, let's talk about your radio program.
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that this past Monday, we had Senator Eddie Milton on with our show, and it was a very good progressive show. As a matter of fact, he made a mention of the fact that the state of Indiana is going to be doing about almost a couple of $1 billion worth of infrastructure improvements in the years of 2018 and 19. And maybe that might have a great effect for the Hobart proposal and for anybody else out there that is looking for funds besides just us. So that's basically about it. Thank you.
Mr. Gazdecki.
I have nothing to add.
Mr. Wyszlinski.
I am good.
Mr. Whitaker.
Nothing.
Mr. Wicklund.
Nothing to add.
All right, my favorite part is statements to the board from the floor. If you'd like to address the board to help us make sure something like that never happens again or anything else, please come up, state your name and address for the record, and let's do this. Yes, sir.
Good evening. Eric Sprenet, 3118 Worth Road, Highland. Tonight I'm representing the South Shore Trails Group. First of all, I'd like to commend the commission for spending the money to pave all the levee taps. That's been a great addition to the flood control and the recreation project. Now that you have nice asphalt surfaces, I would urge the commission to consider modifications to the lawn mowing contracts along the levee tap. This summer, after the grass was cut, the trail was totally covered with all the cuttings. Pretty bad right afterwards, but even a month later, there was still quite a bit of dried grass, the gravel's collecting.
What part of the system did you notice this, sir?
It was especially evident east of the Canadian National Tracks, Gary South in particular.
Okay.
So I think it would be fair to reword the contract to have the contractor clean off the path after he's done cutting grass. Another thing that's happening, there's a lot of weed creep growing up over the edges. If that's not taken care of, that's going to minimize the usable pavement width in all those wonderful paved sections. I've also noticed in other areas on the Highland Munster side, there is some gravel starting to collect in the Highland section of the trail. It wouldn't hurt to run a street sweeper or trail sweeper up and down the path to maintain what is already there. One other thing from vehicular traffic, the pavement surface is starting to crack. It'd be cool to get some crack sealing done there. An example of what happens when you don't do it, I don't know if Mr. Nellen sort of ran out, but you look at all the bike trails in Munster, Hammond, Highland and Griffith, they are all in dire need of crack sealing to prevent frost heaving and frost damage in the wintertime.
Potholes, that's what happens.
Well, they're not quite potholes on the trail, but...
But that's what's going to happen.
Yes, absolutely. So, yes, please consider maintenance. I'll put together some photos and send them to you guys as time allows. One other request for future consideration and construction, which I've mentioned before, a connection of the east and west levee trails over the Canadian National Tracks is warranted, as is reconstruction of the Chase Street Bridge, which is a missing connector for the original recreational path of the trail. Certainly the north levees were paved, but they're not paved all the way up to the road pavements, and two of the north levee trails are right at very busy exchanges right off the interstate at Broadway and Grant. It ain't safe to ride the north trails there. So please consider Chase Street and Canadian National. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Hi there. Lori Zolno, 7142 Forest. I just want to thank everybody for your support over these last goodly number of years. I am delighted that the last piece is in place. And when the last 20 homes or so are out of the floodplain, I'll actually be ecstatic, but let's save that for when it actually happens. Again, I just want to thank you for your continued support.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Sandy O'Brien from Hobart, Indiana. I wanted to mention about Hobart Prairie Grove on the map. That's in Hobart, and that's what all the mitigation property is pretty much circled around. The Hobart Marsh mitigation property is kind of in all the directions of Hobart Prairie Grove as buffer, which is an awesome thing. And I remember when Hobart Prairie Grove was added to the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, the bill passed in October 1992. And I always worried about what was going to happen next to Hobart Prairie Grove. Was it going to have subdivisions? And then the Hobart Marsh mitigation plan came along, and now there's lovely young trees growing in the fields there next to Hobart Prairie Grove. And they're doing a good job, our AES contractors, planting those trees. They're well watered and they mulch them, and they're doing a good job with that. So they should do well. And those were very good presentations, and boy, you guys ask good questions. You're quite the grillers. And Ron McCarron would have been pleased if he was here. Well, since there's no commission member that's all that well-versed in the nuts and bolts of land acquisition and conservation and why you want to do that, I would like to express my support for the Lake County Parks land acquisition projects. The connection to for the future trail across Route 30, that's just precious. You know, even if you live in Porter County, you might think that was good, because there's a lot more reasons to want to be pedestrian and bicycle friendly, and NERPC's been studying that mall area, trying to think about how to make it more bicycle and pedestrian friendly, and this would fit into that, even if it's a pricey parcel. And the Oak Ridge Prairie parcels are important for trail connection too. It's the Oak Ridge Prairie section and the Hobart Prairie Grove, Hobart mitigation, Hobart Marsh mitigation area along the Oak Savannah Trail. Those are the two most awesome sections of the trail. I mean, you can go there and not see any houses a lot of the time. It's very nice. I think that's good for everyone's mental health, if nothing else.
I need more of that.
And those natural areas, they do soak up water. Those native plants, they have deep roots, and they make soil organic carbon, and the carbon in the soil is like a sponge. You know, it's like having a lot of peat moss in the soil, so it soaks up the water. So anyway, land acquisition is good for people and their enjoyment and access and wildlife and just for the earth in general. We need some natural places for the pollinators to hang out. There's nothing else. So the natural areas, they hold the water in the soil, and they release it into the streams in times of drought when it's been so dry, you know, everything's dried up. Well, it would be more dried up without the natural areas feeding a little bit of water that they held in their soil back into the streams. That makes them more sustainable. Relative to the Stinky Creek project, it goes through two properties that I've been involved in stewarding over the years. Stuart Maddox Prairie is owned by the School City of Holbert, and I've taken care of that for more than 20 years. And Save the Dunes property, which is now the Shirley Hines Land Trust property, I'm pretty sure. And I expect that they would say have the same comments that I have regarding this, that well, for one thing, maybe they should look into the sandy soil well contamination that's not too close, not too far from this. But that's on another property that I don't think is involved. But the main thing is that, you know, it's going to be tearing up a lot of high-quality herbaceous and wooded wetland. The herbaceous wetland is like biologically or you know, as far as species per, plant species per, you know, square meter, the herbaceous land is a lot more high quality than the forested wetland. But the forested wetland is considered high quality in general by DNR and the Corps of Engineers because it takes a long time to grow trees. And this is a particularly nice wooded wetland because it's got not just the usual silver maple trees, but it's got pin oaks too, and native sedges and stuff in there. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of destruction. There's got to be a wetland mitigation plan, I would expect. And I hope that that wetland mitigation plan would have a perpetual management plan for protection and maintaining these two-stage ditches that are planted with invasive species, because Hobart, Gary, everywhere, anything planted with native species doesn't end up having the native species a few years later because they're never managed properly. These native species areas, they're going to have to be burned, and they're going to have to keep track of the invasive species, which means annual maintenance on invasive species, and that needs to be funded in the mitigation plan with responsibility as to who's going to funded and who's going to do it. I mean, they're spending a ton of money, and part of that money is destroying high-quality natural areas. Let's make the best of this if we can. People think I'm crazy about invasive species, but they just plain do ruin your natural areas. You have a natural area with 20 to 40 species per square meter, which is, you know, like a yard square, a little bit bigger than that. Well, invasive species take over, you got one species per square meter, and it's usually Phragmites or hybrid cattail. Or reed canary grass, and those are the biggies that need to be managed in this area. There's already a problem here, especially on the Nipsco right-of-way. So there's a good source. So, you know, Nipsco should be getting on the ball here, too. They got a grant application in, but they kind of reel from grant to grant and don't really keep track in between to do the maintenance that they should be doing. So, in any case, I would strongly urge you to make a good recommendation for a perpetual management of this two-stage ditch area, because it's going to introduce a lot of invasive species, and it is destroying a lot of high-quality natural area, as far as I can tell. I haven't seen the map, because I haven't gotten any response from my Open Records Act request. I suspect that it's going to be very destructive. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? 1, 2, 3. Next meeting, November 8th. Can you believe it's November? All right. Motion to adjourn. Second?
Yep.
All right. Thanks for coming out. I'm going to help everybody.